You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade on RadioArian.com.
Better than a dozen, two dozen. That's right. It's installment number 24 of the Church of the Lampshade show. That's right. If it's Radio Aaron, if it's Grandpa Lampshade, it's got to be the Church of the Lampshade. Unless, of course, you're tuning in on Fridays, where I join Sven Longshanks for the Daily Nationalist installment on Fridays, which I like to call Clown World in Review. If you haven't caught that yet, it's like a 30-minute show generally, and we have a lot of fun. It's very lighthearted. We always try to pick something that's, you know, not so heavy. You're rounding out the week. You don't want to end up the week feeling all black-pilled, so we try to, you know, pick out something from Clown World, discuss it, have a few laughs over it while we pretty much make fun of it. And let's be honest, in Clown World, we're never short of material. But right now, it's Tuesday. That means it's the Church of the Lampshade show. Man, we're glad you're here with us. Installment number 24. Great stuff. Of course, as always, special thanks goes out to the two folks this past week who have sent support. It's not as bad as it sounds, because I do have several people that are basically supporting on a monthly basis. And that, of course, also very much appreciated. Very much appreciate the support. If you want to be in on that, and I highly encourage you to do so for obviously very selfish reasons, that information is down at the bottom of the description. I'm going to sit here and ramble it off. You can look at the bottom of the description page. We've got snail mail. We've got Bitcoin. If you've got a different crypto, you can even send me Ripple. I have no pride. Stellar Lumens. I've got no pride at all. I'll take your Stellar Lumens. But I'll even take Ox. I don't care. Just shoot me an email. I'll get you an address for those things. And speaking of email, that's down at the bottom of the page as well. Shoot me your questions, comments, or just say hi. You're welcome to it. And if it's something I think a lot of people might take interest in, I'm going to use it on the show. I think it'll be a lot of fun. Always, I'll try to continue to keep y'all anonymous in doing so. But in the old show, questions and comments were always a real popular thing, and I'm not against doing that now. I've never said officially questions, comments are back, but they kind of are. I mean, because if I think it's something that a lot of people might get something out of, then we're going to use it here. But either way, I'll try to shoot you a response. I'm not so big and famous with a huge head now that I can't respond to simple emails. I do my best to keep up with that. And speaking of that, we're going to kick off the beginning of the show this week with a question comment. We're going to get right to it. This is from Rock Dad, and this was in relation to a couple of episodes back, I believe, where we talked about how assimilation. I said it was talking about how assimilation is an illusion. You know, it's never actually existed. You know, people talk about normicons, like talk about, well, people used to come here and assimilate. The only problem is these immigrants aren't coming here to assimilate. And I was making the case that the assimilations never really existed. We're not going to go over it all again. You can go back if you haven't listened to that show. There's something wrong with you. So you should go back and listen to that show. From Rock Dad, this is a pretty long email. I edited to get to the point here. Grandpa Lampshade, I agree with what you said about a conflict being inevitable. As conflict being inevitable, as more non-whites enter into the country and lobby for power and control over our government and culture, which, of course, we're seeing right now. As whites become less than 50% of the population and these other groups become larger, we will definitely see more racial tension. One thing I wish you would have touched on is that when this conflict comes to a head, whites will be at a disadvantage due to the Jew-controlled media brainwashing the public about how all the conflict will be white Nazis' fault. Sadly, to many dumbass whites will side against their own kind because they will be afraid to be called Nazis, white supremacists, racists. In addition, we need to consider the year. And yes, I'm making fun of the way they always call us these same, like, canned responses. You know, now they're even calling, like, Jews that won't toe the line and blacks white supremacists. It's gone full retard. But anyway, okay. In addition, we need to consider the years of Jewish programming and brainwashing directed towards whites, which will cause them to turn against themselves. Rock Dad. Hey, thank you for the question comment this week. Rock Dad, it gives me easy material. I'm always, and it's good points. It's stuff we might expand on here briefly, at least further. And a couple of things. First off, in a way, it's worse than what you think. Let's toss out some black pills. In a way, it's worse because you say as whites become less than 50% of the population. But you see, in a way, we're already there. Really, we are, because so much of our population is old. And I've made this point before. I mean, there's still silent generations out there. There's a handful of the greatest, so-called greatest generation out there. And then, of course, you have this huge pool of boomers. And you can discount them from the equation. And not just because they're boomers, but just because old people don't lead social, you know, they don't fight on the front lines of social revolution. They just don't. It's human nature. I mean, it is. It's human nature. I mean, even in old times, you know, the kings used to lead their men out into battle, but there would come a time when they were just too old to do that anymore. So old people don't lead, you know, social revolutions. Old people don't lead. They're not leading. I don't know. How do I want to say? They're not really going to rock the boat. Boomers are going to, by and large, because they're old, not just because they're boomers, they're by and large going to try to maintain the status quo so they can try to live their lives out peacefully in their old age. So really, when you discount the boomers, we're already there. We're already at under 50% of the population, because you can discount those older people, because just, again, by their nature, by the nature of being old, you just don't want to rock the boat. Now, as to the rest of it, let's see here. Yes, the Jew-controlled media brainwashing the public about how the conflict will be white Nazis' fault, and how too many will side against because they're scared to be called Nazi and racist. In addition, we need to consider the years of Jewish programming and brainwashing directed towards white people, which will get them to turn against themselves. And that's what we see now. That's what we're seeing. You know, I mean, yeah, that's the situation now. And I mean, we're seeing this conflict, and you know, we're seeing all of this tension, and we see, you know, it's still fairly effective to run around and call people white supremacist, racist, and Nazi. I mean, this is still an effective time, a neo-Nazi. They don't usually even call people Nazis, because that might make people think of, you know, dashing uniforms and things and cool flags. So they use the term neo-Nazi, or as I like to say, neon-Nazi. They use the term neo-Nazi because that makes people, it's supposed to make people get a vision of like tattooed prison gangs with like a huge swastika tattoo on their neck that deals meth out of their backyard. You know, this is supposed to have that effect. It's just saying Nazi doesn't really have that effect. So they use the term neo-Nazi. So it's supposed to have that. And we do. We see a lot of that, but it's having less effect. We're having less effect. And I don't know. I do. It's not that I try to be black pill. It's not that I try to be white pill. I try to look at things as a whole, as best I can with my limited view. And I just try to find the truth. And sometimes it's depressing. I mean, let's be honest. Sometimes it's depressing. But sometimes there's things that aren't so depressing. I think sometimes we get so caught up. And one of the things I've really done here lately is spend less time on the internet. I really have. My of course, only social media I have is Gab, because I've been permabanned off of every other platform. But I'm down to limiting myself to like 15 minutes to 1 hour a day on Gab max, because it's just too, between people that just, it's just, it's toxic. It just, it does. It becomes toxic. And a lot of times, if you spend so much time mixed up in all of this stuff, that you can't necessarily see the big picture. So let's take a look at this, because in a way, I don't think it's as bad as what you think. I mean, there are, for instance, yes, currently we see they call you a neo-Nazi, white supremacist, whatever, that wants to gas 6 quadrillion Jews and put blacks in slavery, whatever nonsense they come up. And it's still effective. But who's it most effective against? The older people, the boomers. And we've already discussed where the boomers are really irrelevant in the equation, because they're not going to rise up in mass to overturn a system that they've grown disgusted with. It's just not going to happen just by the nature of being older people. again, those boomers of you that are listening, you know, I'm not bashing the boomers. It wouldn't matter what generation it is. Older people do not generally, you know, rock the boat. It's just in the human nature. As you get old, you just want your days to be peaceful. You don't want there to be conflict. You don't, you know, the younger you are, a young man, I mean, that's why after a certain age, they won't put you in the military. Besides the fact that it's more difficult to brainwash you. I mean, a young man, 20, 21 years old, I just shoot, man, set the world on fire because they feel like they're going to live forever. They're more or less invincible. You know, after you're 30, 40, 50 and on up, your mortality becomes very much, you become very much cognizant of your own mortality. So in a way, I mean, you can discount a lot of this that is successful already with the amount of control they have. Because again, it's most effective against those who really aren't going to be a factor in this. Now, again, I believe we're seeing this becoming a less and less effective a tactic because they've just gone to the well so many times. I mean, I'm not saying it's not effective. Obviously, you know, I got unemployed from this tactic, but it's becoming less effective because they go back. I mean, like I say, they're calling Jews white supremacists. They're even calling blacks names like this now. I mean, it's becoming, you know, so obvious that anybody that disagrees with the Marxist left is going to get called a neo-Nazi white supremacist. I mean, they throw that around so much. I mean, look at Trump. Trump's a CivNat. He's a CivNat boomer, and he's a white supremacist neo-Nazi. I mean, everybody who disagrees with the extreme Marxist left gets called this, and they've done it to the point that it really is losing its effect. Now, I mean, I'm not downplaying the fact that they still wield a lot of power. Now, we'll move on to the next thing that I think is white pilling. As I do go about these interwebs, and I read a lot of different people's writings, and I watch different people's YouTube videos or whatever, and I'm seeing something very, very interesting. I'm seeing more and more people that aren't on, you know, the extreme dissident right or whatever. They're talking about the role that the Jews play. And they're talking, you know, I mean, these are people that a few years ago weren't talking about this. Just a few years ago, you got more and more. It's becoming something that more people are starting to notice. The role that the Jews are playing in this. And more and more people that aren't extreme hard right wing are starting to notice. They're starting to talk about it. There's a reason that back in the day, the Jews that were pulling the string back in the day, I mean, they took great care to keep a good level, buffer level of goys in front of them because they were very cognizant of, you know, the importance of staying behind the scenes. But we're seeing that thrown away a lot. By and large now, and they just come right on out, and you see, you know, people after a while start noticing, you know, Rosenbaum again or whatever, you know, I mean, the names over and over again, and more people are starting to know, and I'm seeing more and more people that are starting to openly discuss these things. Now, yes, they do still wield. Again, I'm not downplaying the amount of power that's been wielded. I'm not downplaying the obvious effectiveness of the public school brainwashing system. But again, even this, I think, is becoming less effective. I mean, look at the younger generation. Yes, there's, you know, a lot of purple hair, you know, weirdos or whatever in Generation Z, but it's also called Generation Zyklon for a reason because, you know, these younger people coming up are very, they've seen the product of the lies. They've seen the product of the multiculturalism, and they have the internet. They go out and read stuff. There's just so much information. They wind up glomming onto things that are funny. And let's be honest. The Marxist left doesn't do humor. So it's just natural. Kids want to rebel. And what's the current system? The Jewish-controlled Marxist left system. Well, what's rebellion to that? The opposite. And then when they start wandering into the opposite, what do they find? Humor. People doing bants. People doing funny memes. You know, people making fun of the Holy Holocaust and things such as that. You know, stabbing the sacred cow, so as to speak, as the saying goes. And so, of course, the younger people are, you know, they see all of these things. So it's breaking down because it's becoming so absurd. It's becoming more and more absurd. All of these demands that everybody has to go to diversity sensitivity training. You have the ADL running around out here proclaiming that white supremacist violence is the most dangerous violence in America. But yet, what, the vast majority of the population aren't supposed to notice the huge amount of black on white crime. You're not supposed to notice that. No, the real problem is evil white supremacists lurking behind every corner that are what? Going around lynching blacks? Because I haven't seen it. It's losing its effect. Who watches network news? Who reads the New York Times? All these media places are having to lay people off. Why? Because nobody watches them anymore. CNN hasn't made money in who knows how many years. I mean, you know, I mean, it is. Who, again, but who's left that does watch? Who's left that gets their news off, you know, their news information from tuning into the CBS Evening News with Laura O'Donnell? Boomers, they're not a factor anyway because they're old. You see, their control is breaking down. And finally, the U.S. as an empire is collapsing on itself. And as it collapses, this control is going to erode as well. And as finally, as a final point, you know, this brainwashing program, which is very effective. There's no lie about it. It's been a very effective program. I mean, it still remains very effective. But at some point in time, you know, reality kicks you in the teeth. I mean, people start accepting reality. And you can sit around and say, you know, you're the most ardent person that says, you know, I don't believe in racial differences. There's no difference but the color of the skin. I'm not an evil racist. And then you get jumped on by a mob of blacks calling you cracker and they kick your teeth in. You know, at the end of that, you know, the only reason they attacked you is because you were white. That's a tendency to break through the programming. You know, again, I'm not trying to sugarcoat it. I'm not trying. I just, this is the way I observe these things. So, yes, these are real issues. These are real issues. But it's not all everything is against us. It's not all there's no way to win because the status quo is not going to remain. The status quo, yes, there's these people that wield this amount of control. Yes, you know, the government is what it is and those who control it. But it's not me. It doesn't mean it's always going to be that way. And I see, and I'm not saying the listeners portraying this attitude, but I see a lot of people online and they have this attitude like what is right now is going to be forever. It's this way now. Huh? Well, I don't see any. Well, yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, you're not seeing things break down completely today. My kind of canned response I usually use in such situations is, you know, do you see the United States on the trajectory that it's on? You look around at the trajectory that the United States is on right now. The West is on right now. And do you see it continuing in 100 years? I mean, 100 years from now, we just keep going down this path of more and more insanity, of redefining words and redefining, and you're not allowed to say this, and you can't say this, and more diversity. Do you really see the United States existing in 100 years? I don't see how anybody does, honestly. I don't. Okay, so 50 years. Probably not. No, that's still ridiculous. 20 years. Now we're just talking about time frames. 20, 10, 5, who knows? I mean, I don't know. Who knows? As things break down, though, you're going to see this power that gets wielded. You're going to see that erode and become even more and more less effective because as it erodes, they're going to go back to that well. They're going to double down. They're going to clamp down. They're going to shut people down. You're just going to see them just continue to push it harder, and that will naturally again work towards, I believe, work towards, you know, people realizing, you know, coming to grips with the reality of our collapsing society. And again, a great listener question slash comment there. Thank you again to Rock Dad. And it's just something I think that kind of we can segue into what I thought we'd visit about before we get into this week's sermon, which is what everybody comes here for, to be honest, in the Church of the Lampshade. And I wanted to talk about what you can do. What you can do. I thought we'd talk a little bit about what you can do in your life to give you some power. You know, I think one of the things that makes people go off the deep end is they just feel powerless. You know, they look, they become aware of, you know, the state of your society and these things and the Jews, and they wield all of this power and they have all of this power and they have all of this influence and they control all of this. And you become aware of that, and you, somebody's got to do something is what people get to thinking. And then they wind up, you know, going out and going off the deep end. Because largely they feel powerless. And I do. I see this. People get this powerless attitude. I mean, yes, these people wield a lot of power. But a lot of the power they wield, we allow them to have. And I don't just mean as a society. I was having a conversation sometime back with Sven. Longshanks, we were talking about, and I'm just paraphrasing here, but we were talking about the importance of, you know, of the fact that more or less, I'm just paraphrasing because it's been a while back when we had the conversation, but it was essentially that, you know, it's about getting our people to quit rolling over and letting the Jews do this stuff to them. It's not about, you know, well, we got to attack these Jews. It's about getting our, you know, everything. Basically, when you come down to it, everything that has happened to our society, our people as a people have allowed it to happen. Now, I'm not letting the Jews off the hook and blaming our own people, but I mean, it is what it is as far as responsibility. I mean, you let 2% of the population run your entire media, run Hollywood, and control your government. I mean, you got to own some of that. But that's not what I want to talk about. I don't want to talk about the big picture as far as a society, as a people, because we know this has happened over generations. I mean, this, you know, who set up who allowed the Federal Reserve to be set up? I mean, hell, it wasn't the boomers. It wasn't Gen X. It wasn't the greatest. I mean, you can keep going back further and further. I mean, this is a step-by-step thing that has happened over many, many years. You know, so, I mean, there's plenty of blame to go around. What I thought we'd visit about, though, is taking power in your own life. Quit being powerless. Things you can do that take away their power over you. For instance, we go on about the usury scam, you know, or to be specifically, the Jewish usury scam, because, I mean, the big banks are virtually under the control of the Jews. The Federal Reserve has been under the control of the Jews. But how can you free yourself of the power? I mean, you can sit there and bitch about the Jews and their usury scheme. Yeah, but how much debt do you have? I mean, how many of us still go out and take on more debt? Well, I've got to go borrow money to get it. I mean, I'm not saying that debt never makes sense. You know, for instance, if you can borrow the money and get a good deal on a house, then that makes more sense than throwing money, you know, usually makes more sense than throwing money away on rent. I mean, you're going to spend the money per month anyway. You got to have somewhere to live. So normally, I mean, borrowing the money on a house, And you know, that eventually, even if it's 20 years, 30 years or whatever, it will be yours. That makes sense. However, when you've got 5-10 years left on your mortgage and you take out a second mortgage so that you can have a lot of money to run around now and buy a boat and play with friends and go on a trip to Hawaii, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. Borrowing the money to get a house because you're going to spend the money anyway, that makes sense. Borrowing the money to buy equipment, for instance, that can earn you more money. I mean, if you borrow $50,000 for a piece of equipment that over 3 years is going to make you $150,000, that makes sense. Even paying the interest, because you're going to make, that's where the money's going to come from. Because the thing with usury, the thing with interest is that extra money has to come from somewhere. And if you're borrowing it to invest in something that's going to earn you money. I had a guy tell me many, many, like 20 years ago, he said, look, he was a business owner. He said, look, if I can borrow money at, you know, the interest rates were higher back then. If I can borrow money at 10% and make 20% on it, I'll do that every day. And it makes sense. If you borrow money to make more money, that makes sense. borrowing money to go on a vacation to Hawaii, that doesn't make sense because that extra money, that interest, has got to come from somewhere. Every time you take on more debt, you sit here and bitch about the Jews and their usury. Yeah, that's fine and dandy, but every time you take on more debt, you're giving them power over you. You're voluntarily handing them the power. And it's worse, in a way, if you think about it, it's worse than those who are clueless about it all, because you get it and you're still voluntarily handing that power over to them. I mean, yeah, it's bad, but at the same time, I mean, how do you bitch about the Jews and their usury schemes and you're voluntarily buying into their usury scheme? Yes, I've said myself, look, things are priced to debt. They're not priced in money. So if you want to go buy a new car and it's, say, $30,000, you can't save up $30,000 unless you borrow the money and go into debt. Well, guess what? Don't get a new car. It's not the end of the world. Really, I mean, yeah, you just have to do without it. You're not going to get a new car. Isn't that better than selling yourself into slavery and then bitching about your slave master? Again, I'm not letting the Jews off the hook here, and I know somebody inevitably is going to say, see, you're just making excuses for the Jews. No, I'm not making excuses for you. You can't sit here and bitch about the Jews and the usury scheme and then turn around and voluntarily buy into the usury scheme. I mean, how stupid is that? And look, the point I'm making here is to make you feel bad about yourself, isn't to make you beat yourself up. It's to make you realize that you have power in your life. You're not this helpless thing, and the Jews just wield all of this power. Look, a lot of the power they wield is voluntarily given up by you. Stop going into debt. Try to get your bills. Look, I realize you're in debt. You know, but start trying to pay that off. Start trying to put some money back. I know what it's like, believe me, to live week to week. I get that. But you exasperate the situation when you go further into debt. You have the power. Don't volunteer. We hear about you. We talk. So many people talk about, you know, the Jews and their control over media. The Jews and their control. How the pornography industry is virtually controlled by all these Jews. Yet, how many of you are still on porn? How many of you? To be honest, you don't have to answer, you don't have to tell me, but be honest with yourself. You sit here on the one hand, and you know on some level, especially if you're a Christian believer, you know on a spiritual level that it's wrong. And you probably don't grasp the amount of spiritual poison that is contained within. You sit here and bitch about the Jews control the porn industry, and then you're still on porn. You're still taking in the porn, soaking it up, poisoning your mind, poisoning your spirit. I can guarantee you, if you get off of porn, in a month's time, you will see an amazing difference. You will see a difference in your mind and how you think. You have that power. It's something. The Jews aren't holding a gun to your head and forcing you to watch porn. You're volunteering to do that. So you're voluntarily giving up that power. All the while, you openly talk about Jews control the porn industry. Well, how is it their fault if you're going to sign up for it voluntarily? Who's the stupid goy now? Get off it. Use your imagination instead. Whatever you got to do, just keep yourself from taking in porn. Use your imagination, whatever you want to do for such things, whatever. Just get off the porn. You'll see an amazing difference in your life because you're voluntarily giving that power up. And when you do, you're going to realize what poison it is. You're going to realize, oh my gosh, you've been taking this toxic stuff that's toxic to your mind and toxic to your spirit. You've been voluntarily taking that in. Like a heroin addict, and you see them and they're all screwed up and needle hanging out of their arm on the street. You know, it's like that for your spirit, for your mind. You might, even if you're an atheist and you don't believe in spirit or anything like that, fine. It's poison. It's poison in your mind. Get off of it. Because you're the one giving them the power. They can produce all the porn they want to. And yes, it is addictive. They know it's addictive. But they can't force you to take it in. Ultimately, that's your decision. It's your power. Take back your power. Quit giving it to them. Let them produce. They're going to produce all the porn they want to. Quit. They can't force you to watch it.
Yes, but what about society as a whole?
Look, you don't control society as a whole. You do not control other people and what you do. All you have control over is yourself. You get off of it and see the difference that it makes in your life. You know, you can't change everybody. What about all these other young men? Yes, you don't have control over them. But you know what? If you yourself get off of it, get your mind right, start getting your spirit right, and then maybe you can tell some other man, hey, I got off of that stuff, and let me tell you the difference it makes. You can affect one other person. That's all this is. You can affect yourself, and maybe down the road, once you get yourself clean, so as to speak, you can help somebody else. So much of this stuff, we bitch about it. We hear people, but we voluntarily give that power to them. You don't have control over society as a whole. You can do your little part. And that starts with you, because that's what you have control over. You have control over yourself. You don't have control over anybody else. You have control over yourself. If you want to stop feeling powerless, if you want to stop feeling like there's nothing you can do, then start working on the things that you can control, the things that you can make a difference in. And that means working on yourself. Let's get in here. Fill those pews. It's time for this. It's kind of sounded sermon-y already, didn't it? It sounded like I was already preaching there. But no, we haven't even officially got into this week's sermon in the Church of the Lampshade. So get on in here. Fill those pews. It's time for the Church of the Lampshade. So as you get in here, and by the way, I am wearing the official Church of the Lampshade attire. We need to have official. One of these days, we're going to have like an official congregation. We actually have a building or something. I don't know. It's just fun stuff to think about. Yes, I have the official Church of the Lampshade attire on. So as you get settled in here, we're going to be for scripture this week for your reference. If you want to get that ready, we're going to look at we're going to be in the book of Luke, chapter 12. We're going to start at 42, verse 42, and go till whenever I feel like stopping. Which is the way it usually goes is kind of like start, stop, start, stop, start, start. You know how it is. The Reverend Lampshade is going to just ramble. You know, that's how we roll. So as you get settled in, let's go ahead and get started off. We'll start off with some scripture reading. And like I said, we're in the book of Luke, chapter 12. We'll start at verse 42. And the Lord said, this is Jesus speaking. And the Lord said, who then is the faithful and wise steward whom his Lord shall make ruler over his household and to give them their portion of meat in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. This is something I've touched on a lot, because so many in the modern church, they have this attitude of, I don't need to do anything. Jesus is coming. And when Jesus comes, he's going to fix everything. And he is. I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with taking heart and the fact that the victory is ultimately ours. I mean, the end of this game, the end of this movie, the end of this, whatever you want to think of it as, is predetermined. The outcome is predetermined. At some point in time, Christ appears and shuts the game down, and the time of the final judgment will be upon us. It's going to be a scary time. You know, it's easy to sit here and say, well, I can't wait till the Lord comes back. It's going to be a dreadful and fearful thing. When, yes, those of us who are his people, I mean, we have a hope in this, but it's going to still, I can imagine that it's going to scare, it's going to be horribly frightening even for believers. It is. It's going to be this huge thing. It's something you can't even imagine because it means it's over. It means there's no forward time when the final judgment, Christ returns and the final judgment takes place, because he does judgments along the way. And they're judgments that still give people, there's leeway for people to correct their actions. There's leeway for people to finally accept him as their Lord and Savior and turn their hearts towards him, the lost sheep. Obviously, the children of the devil, those who are seeds of the devil, you know, there's no hope for them because they're incapable of that. But for those that are lost wheat instead of tares, to use that parable, you know, there's still time for them to turn to the Lord. The thing about the final judgment is, when that comes about, there is no more leeway. There is no more when the people look up and they've lived a horrible, they've lived for the sinful nature their entire lives. They've cast aside the spiritual nature and indulged in every sort of wickedness. The sinful nature has been their heart. When the time comes that Christ appears, they can't go, well, I believe now. It's too late. What a dreadful time. So many people, the vast majority of the earth's population is going to be cast into hell. It's a dreadful, dreadful day. It can be horribly frightening. You don't get to wait till he appears and go, well, I believe now. Should have showed up earlier. It's not the way it works. And there's this attitude in the modern cuck church that you don't have to do anything. You wait till Jesus appears because he's going to fix it all. And don't even get me started on the rapture nonsense. Another excuse that you don't have to do the work the Lord has set out upon you. You just wait around. In fact, you don't even have to wait for Jesus to show up because they're sending angels to take you off the earth. Why the hell do you think you're so special? By the way, there's no spiritual foundation for that. None. I've read this I don't know how many times. There is no spiritual basis for this notion of the rapture. And my interactions with you fellow believers here in the Church of the Lampshade, y'all ain't buying that shit either. So there's no need to beat that to death. But yeah, you know, what is the rapture? This notion that you really, really don't need to do the work of the Lord, because not only is Jesus going to come and fix it all, but before he comes and fixes it all, he's giving you a free pass. You get to cut to the front of the line. The only way you get to cut to the front of the line before the final judgment is when you die. You get to cut to the front of the line then. But that's it. That's the only way. There is no free pass. You've got to do the work that God sets up before you, even if it seems pointless. Even if it's like, why am I doing that? And believe me, some of the crap I deal with, some of the crap I've gone through, and I sit here and I'm like, what am I doing? I don't have a super mega church with a limousine and a Cadillac Escalade. But I'm certainly not I'm not rich doing this. What am I doing here? I'm doing the work that God has set before me. I'm not tooting my own horn, by the way. I hope that didn't come off that way. It's not how I intended it. The point is, you do the work that God has given you, no matter what that work is. This right here. Our congregation, all of you listening, this ministry, if you would, this is the work God has given me to do, whether I feel like it or not. And sometimes, honestly, I don't feel like it. There's been times I really don't feel like it. But God has made it clear, this is what I'm supposed to do. And he's got something you're supposed to do. You may not know what it is yet, but figure it out. In the meantime, live your life as best you can in the spirit, your day-to-day life. You might influence somebody and not even know you do. You may say something and you don't even realize it's that big a deal. You just, somebody says something and you're like, well, I don't watch porn. That's poison for your mind. And somebody may take that and you just set it off time just as a statement. And that person goes home with that and they say, well, maybe I should get off of that. And that person then goes on and does a greater work in the Lord. But you have a part in that, and you don't even realize you had a part in it just by living your life as most upright as you possibly can, doing the work that God has set before you. Let's continue on here. Now, see, I went on already. We barely got started. I went on already. I'm already losing my place here. Let's see here. Yes. Blessed is the servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. You'll be blessed. When Jesus does show, if you're alive, when the final judgment comes around, you're supposed to be doing. Doesn't matter. Jesus isn't going to show up and you're slaving away at the work he has given you. He's not going to show up and say, what are you doing, you idiot? That's pointless. Why didn't you just wait around for me to show up? No. He knows you're not going to fix this. Just you. He knows you can't. But you're doing what you can. He's doing what you can. You're doing what you can. That's what's important. You'll be blessed. Of a truth I say unto you. And something you'll notice, and I recommend this in your scripture reading, when you read your scripture on your own. I hope you read some scripture on your own. When you read the words of Jesus, because when I was even, you know, back when I attended church, back before it was way in Cuckville like it is now, I can only imagine what it's like now. But it's like when people would read the words of Jesus, they would almost put this like effeminate, this feeling, you know, of a truth I say to you, that he will make him ruler over all he has. When you do your scripture reading, try to read it in a way where Jesus is coming off like he's not messing around, because he's not. He's speaking with force. He's speaking in a very masculine. He's the Son of God. Okay. He's speaking with authority. You went and met some great ruler. You know, you watch a Hitler speech. He's speaking like that. Now, my fellow folk, let me tell you about these feelings. You know, these feelings I have about my people, because I love my people and we have to preserve our. No, he spoke with authority. And then I believe Jesus speaks with just a little something, a little pro tip from the Reverend Lampshade. Read Jesus's words with authority. It changes your view on it. It really will. I mean, just kind of pay attention to how you read them, the tone that you take. Don't read it in the tone of touchy-feely Jesus of the modern cut church. Read it in the tone of Jesus, who's eventually going to send most people to hell. Okay, of a truth I say unto you, that he will make him ruler over all that he hath. But if that servant say in his heart, my Lord delayeth his coming, and shall begin to beat the men servants and maidens, and to eat and drink, and to be drunken, and watch porn, and partake in iniquity and wickedness of the world. Okay, I added those part, but you get the point. You just abandon. What's the use? I'll wait till Jesus shows up, and then he'll fix everything. There's no point in it. I can't fix the world. I can't save Western civilization. What can I do? There's no point doing anything. If I can't fix it all, there's no point in doing anything. You don't have to be literally going around beating people. He's making an illustration here, because in those days they had men servants, they had maidens that tended to the household of a rich person. And the rich person in this illustration has gone away for a while. He put this guy in charge. Now, this guy, he thought the head of the household, the rich guy that left, he thought he was going to be gone like a month. So, you know, yeah, boy, first he's tending his duties. He's looking after things, making sure stuff's getting done, trying to treat people fairly, because he's thinking when the master of the house comes back, these guys are going to report. He's going to ask around, hey, what kind of job this guy been doing? And he wants them to say he's been doing a good job. But then a month goes by, 2 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years goes by, and the rich guy that owns the estate hadn't shown back up. Maybe he's dead. Who knows? Maybe he's never coming back. And you start what? Getting lackadaisical. I'm running this place now. I'm somebody. You go in town, hey, respect me. I'm the master of the estate out there. Well, you own it. Yeah, you were put in charge while the real owner's gone. It's a heavy burden. It's a heavy responsibility. But no, yeah, you're starting to think of yourself. Now you're taking it upon yourself to beat the servants, to be unfair, unjust. You're drinking the master's wine and getting drunk. Eating at his table, using his silverware. What? You're thinking more of yourself. You are getting arrogant. And you're lacking justice. You've given up justice. You're no longer worried about what the master, who knows when he's coming back. Heck, he may never come back. maybe dead somewhere. Let's see here. Verse 46, yes. The Lord of that servant will come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour when he's not aware, and will cut him in sunder, and will appoint him his portion with the unbelievers. Whew. And that servant, which knew his Lord's will, and prepared not himself, neither did according to his will, shall be beaten with many stripes. Because back in them days, somebody in this situation would be taken out and tied to a post and whipped. Literally, they would take a whip, like flail the skin off of you. Serious stuff. But he that knew not and did commit things worthy of stripes shall be beaten with few stripes. For unto whomsoever much is given, of him shall be much required. And to whom men have committed much, of him they will ask more. This is heavy. It really is. The servant which knew his Lord's will and prepared not himself, neither did according to his will, shall be beaten with many stripes. You believe in Jesus? You call yourself a Christian? And yet you refuse to do the work of the Lord, whatever that may be. It may seem little. You refuse. You are not a just person. You don't strive to be as upright and righteous as you can be. You're just as wicked as everybody else, and you're not trying to get better. Because everybody's got to start from somewhere. Look, everybody's got to start from somewhere. What's important is that you're striving to get better. You're not doing the work that the Lord has set out. Because look around. You know, people say, well, I don't even know what God wants me to do. Look around, okay? This world is not lacking in wickedness. It's not lacking in being screwed up. You can find something to do. Just by living your life in an upright manner, you are affecting the world, okay? By doing something, you do whatever. There's no lack of material. Like I said earlier, we do Clown World in Review on the day. We're never lacking clown material because we're in Clown World. Look at this fallen, wicked, decaying world. You can find something righteous. You can find anywhere where you can find an injustice and you can bring justice to the situation where you can speak truth. You can do the work of the Lord. It doesn't have to be this huge thing. The attitude people get is they're waiting around. I'm waiting around. Because one of these days, God is going to bring this huge thing for me to do. One day, I'm going to wake up. There's going to be like an angel of the Lord in front of me. And this angel of the Lord is going to say, today's the day. Here's what you've got to do. Here's your mission. Here's what you've got to do. And then, man, I'm going to do this great thing of the Lord. I'm going to do this great work of the Lord. Until then, I'm going to do whatever. I'm going to get drunk, beat my wife. I'm going to go cheat my business partner out of his money because, you know, piss on him. I don't like that sumbitch anyway. It ain't how it works, folks. That's not how it works. These verses here speak volumes about the justice of the Lord. I don't know how hell works, but really, I mean, look, I don't. There's different theories out there, you know. There's different views on this. I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know all of the intricacies because that hasn't been revealed to me. But I think it's telling that Jesus points out here that those who know better, those who know the truth, those who claim to know him and claim to be his people, and they know better, are going to be held to a higher standard. Where those who know not, Yeah. I mean, those who don't know any better, but they've committed wickedness. Look, if they didn't know any better and they committed wickedness, they're not going to be as held to a high standard as those who know better. God is just. God is just in all that he does. Let's continue on here because we got a lot to cover and we're already running the clock out here. I am come to send fire on the earth, and what will I if it be already kindled? But I have a baptism to be baptized with, and how am I straitened till it be accomplished? Suppose ye that I am come to give peace on the earth? I tell you nay, but rather division. Boy, really? Because in the modern cuck church, Jesus is the Jesus of all he does is love everybody. I bring a fire. I'm not, you think I'm here to bring peace? Guess again. Let's read on here, because this is coming up here is something that's a stumbling block a lot of times, I think, especially for non-believers. For from henceforth there shall be five in one house divided, three against two and two against three. The father shall be divided against the son, and the son against the father, and the mother against the daughter, and the daughter against the mother. The mother-in-law against her daughter-in-law, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. You have to understand, back in those days, it wasn't uncommon for, I mean, extended families to all live more or less under one roof. It wasn't an uncommon thing. In Korea right now, even today, it's a commonplace thing that when a couple is married, like the dad's mom, the mother-in-law, will live with them. If you're a woman listening to this, can you imagine? Can you imagine living with your mother-in-law? But it was commonplace for these folks to all live under one roof. Now, a lot of people look at this, but see, Jesus is—he's talking right here. He's here to sow division. He's not here to sow. See, there's a problem with Christianity. You can't be for your people. Jesus is saying you're even divided against your own family. This is important because it ties in with what we just. With everything else we've covered here. Division in the household. Five in one household divided. Three against two. Two against three. You know, you sit here and say, but Jesus is about dividing us then. He's about causing conflict with us. This always comes back to the way, the truth, and the life center word truth. If you are dealing in the truth, you're dealing with things that are godly. They're of the Lord, especially in this world of wickedness. Most of you who listen to this show, probably virtually all of you, are political activists on some level or another. I mean, you're pro-white. You know, you speak, you believe in these, you've come to believe, I mean, the truth of our decaying society, and you look at these, and you speak these truths. You say multiculturalism, diversity is not our strength. It's making our society worse. And what happens? Go to a big family get together, if anybody has those anymore. And proclaim diversity is not our strength. It's destroying our societies. Speak the truth to realistic racial divisions. Differences. Realistic racial differences. And start seeing what kind of turmoil boils up in your own household. Why? You're just speaking the truth. You see, if you're speaking the truth, you're speaking of Jesus. You could be a complete atheist right now. Listen to this show. Complete atheist. And you go to your family get together and you start speaking these truths about racial differences. Diversity is not our strength. We've got to, you know, we've got to do something. We got to secure a future for our white children and so on and so forth. And what are you going to have? You're going to have division. Why? Because you're speaking the words of Jesus. You're doing the works of Jesus and you don't even know it. You're not even a Christian believer, and here you are doing Jesus stuff, and you don't even get it. Why? Because you're speaking truth. And what does the truth bring about? Even though you're not even a Christian believer, what does the truth bring about? Division. Why? Because it's of Jesus. And Jesus said, I'm bringing division to the household. I'm not bringing peace and unity. Why? Because he's bringing truth. And when you bring truth, you're going to have division. Why? Because the world loves the lies. The world loves darkness. The world doesn't. They want their wickedness hidden. They want to believe the lie. When you bring the truth, you're bringing Jesus. And guess what? You're bringing division. Don't believe it? You're not a believer. You don't have to be a believer. Get together with your extended family. Get together with a group of friends and just maybe you don't say anything about this racial stuff or about your society or your political beliefs and speak the truth. Speak the truth to your friends. Speak the truth to in a mixed crowd at a get together, at a company party. Well, you know, Bob, I was just thinking diversity really isn't our strength. The more diverse we get, the worse things are getting. Silence. Crickets. If you're speaking the truth, you're speaking Jesus stuff. Whether you believe it or not, doesn't matter. The truth's the truth. That doesn't change. You speak the truth, you're going to get division. I can virtually guarantee you. I can guarantee you speaking the truth brings division. This isn't Jesus telling people you need to turn against your family. Because that's why I see a bunch of spurging unbelievers that apparently don't even have second grade tier grasp of the scripture will spurg shit like this. And it pisses me off, to be honest. Things you won't hear your cuck pastor say. It does. It pisses me the hell off. They say Jesus says he wants you to turn against your family. That's not what he's saying. He's not telling you go out and turn against your family and hate them. He's warning you. If you're going to stand in Jesus, you're going to stand in the truth. And guess what? It's going to bring division. He's not telling you go out and start treating your parents like shit. He's not telling you to do that because that would be in violation with what God has told us not to do. You know, honor your father and mother. And he says, I haven't come to overturn those things as far as these ways you're supposed to conduct yourself that God had already set forth. I haven't come to overturn those things. He's not telling you to start hating your family. He's not telling you to go out and start, you know, you have division in your house because you go home and you start acting like a dick to everybody. He's not telling you to do that. He's warning you. If you're speaking truth, there's going to be division. Better be ready for it. You think that walking on the path of Jesus is going to be all about peace and love? And because all you got to do is love everybody. He's warning you. He's warning you. You walk the path that Jesus, with Jesus, it ain't going to be peace and tranquility. It's going to be division because that's what the truth brings. This is amazing stuff to me.
This is a part where I should sound passionate.
I really get wound up because these are just amazing things to me. You can be a complete unbeliever, and if you're out there speaking the truth doesn't change. You're doing Jesus stuff, and you don't even know it. If you just accept him, you could be getting credit for it on a higher level. I mean, he says here that though, you know, you get some credit for it because you are doing the right thing. But it's just an amazing thing.
You either do what you're supposed to be doing or you're not. What matters is what you're doing. Action. Faith is action. You know what your Lord, you're doing the things that your Lord has given you to do. That's what matters.
Really, what we have already covered here, an unbeliever, think about this. Think about this for a minute. An unbeliever out here speaking truth and speaking truths and actually trying to do the right thing versus somebody who mouths the words about being a believer and stuff and yet refuses to do the work that the Lord has given them to do. God's all about justice. How do you think that plays out?
Are you really?
How do you think that plays out? There's always so many. You just read a little bit of scripture and get so much out of it. And this is no exception. And this tells us, if you've been sitting here and we've been having this discussion for going on 30 minutes now, and you've been sitting here this whole time, but Reverend Lampshade, I don't know what God wants me to do. You keep talking about doing the work of the Lord. I don't know what he wants me to do. I don't know. What am I supposed to be doing? Well, here you go. Start with speaking. Start with walking in the truth. Start with that. There's a basic fundamental Jesus thing that you can be doing. That's why I say everybody's got work. You got something you can be doing in the Lord right now. Maybe he has something bigger ahead of you. But if you can't even accomplish little things, he's not going to hand you a bigger task. That's what I talked about earlier. It's so foolish. People will get this mindset that I'm going to wait around and the Lord's going to show up one day and hand me this huge task, this huge important task to do. Why would he? You haven't done anything yet. You have to accomplish little things. You hire on to a new job, you know, more than likely, and you have no experience in that job. Yeah, they're not going to hire you. Like if you go to college and you're a young person, you go to college and you graduated with a degree. Well, congratulations. So have tens of thousands of other people, if not more, have also graduated with a degree. If you think you're going to graduate college and hire on with a company and they're going to hire you as the CEO, that's not the way it works. You're going to start at a little job. You're going to probably be filing papers and making copies and going and getting people's coffee and whatever the hell else, because they want to see if you can do the little stuff first. Everybody starts off doing the little stuff and then they work their way up. God ain't going to hand you a big mission to do someday when you haven't done anything little yet. That's the way things work. And I don't know what to do. Start with the truth. Start with embracing the truth. Start with trying to walk in the truth. Start with trying to affect the things you can affect. And that starts with yourself. How many times do we... Yeah, we can sometimes sit here, I think, go for 2 hours, and I refuse to do so because people don't have that kind of time to sit here and listen. But really, how many times, just pay attention, how many times you lie to yourself about things? How many times you lie to yourself? You say, well, I, that doesn't bother me. Yes, it does. Why are you lying to yourself? You can't speak the truth to other people. You can't speak the truth to the Lord in your prayers when you're lying to yourself. Start speaking. You got to start somewhere. Start speaking the truth to yourself. Quit lying to yourself. Be honest with yourself for a change. Then in your prayers, you can start being honest. How are you going to pray when you can't even, you don't even know, because you've been lying to yourself for so long. You can't even pray to God in any sort of coherent manner because you spend all your time lying to yourself. You can turn around and then what? Speak truth to God. Then how are you going to go speak truth to other people? You've been lying to yourself. You've been lying to God because you don't even know. You lied to yourself so long, you don't even know what the truth is in your own life. My point here is you start somewhere. And start somewhere with the truth. We're going to wrap up on that note. I hope you've enjoyed this week's show/sermon. As always, it's my hope that you get something out of it. It's always my prayer that you get a blessing out of it, that this congregation that we have through this show will lift you up, will give you more to think about. You know, something to pray on, something you realize, hey, wow, I could do something. I'm not powerless. I have power. I have a sword of truth I can wield. God didn't leave you weaponless. You have armor. Put on the full armor of God. You have these things. You have your salvation. You have the truth. You have your faith. You're not just floating around out here helpless, a leaf in the wind. You have power. It's up to you to seize it. It's up to you to grab a hold of the truth. We'll wrap up on that note. Thank you again for those who financially support the show. Again, that information's at the bottom. And again, email at the bottom, grandpalampshade1@gmail.com. If you want to shoot questions, comments, or whatever this way, if it's something I think apply to a lot of people, we'll be glad to use it here on the show. It'll be a lot of fun. Folks, we're going to get out. Don't forget to catch us when I sit down with Sven Longshanks to do a Clown World in Review on the Friday installment of the Daily Nationalist Show right here on Radio Arian. That's always a lot of fun. And until then, we'll see you Tuesday next week, same time, same place, right here on Radio Arian for the Church of the Lampshade.